Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, last week we started on Perikof Aleph. We hoped to finish Perikof Aleph, but we did not. So we'll continue today on Perikof Aleph. And this is, as we talked about last week, in the several preceding prakim, the Maral was dealing with the Torah and the Avos, based on the premise that, you know, the Torah is this perfection of the world. So he had this question about the idea. So why did it take so long? Why, if it was so of necessity, as the way the Maral so unusually explained the idea of Torah min Hashamayim, his proofs of Torah min Hashamayim, because there had to be some element of guidance from above that would come to complete the image of man. So what took so long? So he explained in different stages what was happening in the Tkufas HaAvos, what it was waiting for, and the relationship of Avram to Torah, who Avram kept Kol HaTorah Kula, Yitzchak, Yaakov. But then we got in Perek Chaf Aleph to when the Torah would be given, which would be through Moshe Rabbeinu. And so what he has to talk about here is the relationship of the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, why Moshe Rabbeinu has the Torah. And last week, we did talk about that. We talked on some level about the absolute uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu and the otherworldliness of Moshe Rabbeinu. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is, in certain ways, like a Malach Elokim, as the language of the Rambam says, because of the differences which he had to adopt in his lifestyle to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the way that he was. Because Torah, which is Madrega, in the language of the Maral, Madrega El Yoinam Yuchedes Achle Yishtate Flo Dovar, Torah, which is of such a lofty level that really can't be properly, fully connected to anything else, has to also be given the vehicle to bring it down here, would have to be someone who similarly possesses this Madrega El Yoinam Yuchedes, this singular quality and this singular stature, that actually yishtatef l'davar. So that's part of the story. That was part of the story, the way he started. If you remember last week, we had a little bit of a tangent to the essential theme where he spoke about Torah tziva lanu Moshe, that Moshe Rabbeinu gave us 611 of the mitzvahs, but two of them had to be given directly to the klal, the Maral's understanding, his unique understanding of why anochi v'layil l'cham mipi agvura shemanum, why those two commandments would be given to us in general, because those in fact are connections to the nation as a whole. And now, finally, let's go back to where we left off, which was the very surprising statement of Chazal that requires, you know, real understanding, which is the story of Bilam, where Chazal say that when the Pasuk says at the end of the Torah that there was no prophet like Moshe Rabbeinu, that no Navi, like Kambi Yisrael, Kamaisha Oid, Navi Umavit, I'm quoting you the language of Yigdal, right, which is not the last pasuk in the Torah, right, but it's which articulates this principle of faith from the very end of the Torah. The pasuk says, like Kam Navi Oid Bi Yisrael, Kamaisha, Asher Yodai Hashem Panim El Panim. No Navi would arise amongst the Jewish people like Moshe, that Hashem knew him, Yodai Hashem Panim El Panim, face to face. So the Gemara famously says as a drasha that lekam be Yisrael avol umes aylam kam. That not the Gemara, but Chazal say that it would not be amongst the Yisrael that there would arise such a prophet, but amongst the umes aylam there would be such a prophet. There would be such a prophet, and that would be Bilam Harasha. Right? The nevuah of Bilam has its own strength, and its own, to some degree, parallel to that of Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is an astounding thing, and that's what the Maral is coming here to some degree to be mevar, to explain. Now, there are those who will explain how it is that Bilam's Nevuah is equal to Moshe Rabbeinu. What the Maral is going to explain is actually that even as Bilam did have in certain ways a Nevuah which was equal to Moshe Rabbeinu, but he's going to speak about what Chazal say to accent the differences between the Nevuah of Bilam and the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu, which is going to make us understand better in a certain sense, the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, there's a classic, the Maril Diskin, Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin, who was the Rav of Yerushalayim after being the Rav of a Rav in Yerushalayim after being the Rav of Brisk, Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin. So he has he has a famous like addendum to his Tshuvas where he writes about this notion of the Nevuah of Bilam HaRasha. And the way I'm going to say it over perhaps is not exactly the way he said it, but the way we'd say it, the way we try to explain it often is as follows. You know, if you have a dish, I once had a family member of my wife's. We had a family member of my wife visiting for Shabbos, and it was in the early days of my marriage when I would still make the cholent. Before I unfortunately was not able to do that anymore. So she tasted the cholent. She's a very good cook. She tasted the cholent, and you know, my wife proudly said that I made the cholent. My wife is no longer proud of me, unfortunately. And she said, "Oh, very good." She says, "Let me guess the spices." And she proceeded to list precisely the four spices that were in the cholent. And I was like, "Wow, you know, like." You know, for me, it's like a chiddush if I can tell that there are potatoes in there. how do you do that? But, you know, someone who has a very, very good and sensitive taste will be able to identify exactly the ingredients, exactly what's there. Now, there's also somebody else who's able to identify exactly what's there. If you had a person, for instance, who, instead of it being a cholent, it was a cake, right? And you'd give her to give this person to taste the cake, and they would say, delicious, I think you put a little bit of this in there and a little bit of that in there. Again, the gourmet can do that, but somebody else can taste the cake and suddenly say, there are nuts in here. And how's that? Because they're allergic to nuts. In other words, sensitivity can come from appreciation, and sensitivity can come from, in a certain sense, like a certain antagonism, almost an oppositional sensitivity. Right, a person can have the fantastic eyesight and be able to notice any tiny little thing, and a person can have eyes that, heaven forbid, are so bad that any tiny bit of light, right, suddenly, right, you know, they're gonna be bothered by it. So essentially, this is the way I must confess I haven't read the Maril Diskin inside in many, many years. And so it could be, I don't know again to what extent it's being faithful and how they say it over, but his understanding, which I think is very, very important understanding of how Bilam was able to see things with the same clarity in a certain sense that Moshe Rabbeinu did, was that because Bilam is seen to some degree as the antithesis of the Kedusha, the antithesis, right? The Talmud of Avram Avinu is this way, with all the good, with these three good attributes. The Talmud of Bilam HaRasha is the exact opposite, right? He's arrogant, he's self-censored, he's lustful. So Bilam, as the antithesis of the purity of Moshe Rabbeinu, as much as Moshe Rabbeinu was able to look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu head on and appreciate and experience everything directly without any barrier, Bilam, because of how far he was also equally able to sense everything, every aspect of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to say. It was so at odds with him that he was in that sense able to pick it up. So that's his understanding. I mean, it rings, you hear it? You hear it? It's a very interesting understanding. I think it has resonance in a lot of ways. You could see it even without such mystical things like Nevuah, like prophecy. Even sometimes also, you know, when somebody is like very, very much uncomfortable with something, they're also able to sense very much when it's there, when that thing is there. Right. Okay. Call out paisa with my paisa. One who condemns something, it's because they notice it in themselves. They have it in themselves. So perhaps that can serve, even though the Maral doesn't speak about this to great extent, as part of the premise for how Bilam was able to understand. But let's listen again. We're going to go over little bit of what he read last time, the Chazal, two Chazal in which speak about this relationship between the prophecies. Shloisha dvarim hayu b'maisha mashalei hayu b'bilam. There were three things that Moshe Rabbeinu had that Bilam didn't have. Moshe hayu medaber imei pel peh. Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Hashem, so to speak, mouth to mouth, directly, as it says, pel peh adaber boy. Moshe hayu medaber imei ponim el ponim. Moshe spoke to him face to face. And Moshe hayu medaber imei oimed. Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Hashem standing. Whereas Bilam was neifel, was falling, ugelui einayim, with his eyes open. Okay, this is all, in a certain sense, one distinction. Moshe Rabbeinu was direct, face-to-face, mouth-to-mouth, standing, encountering Hashem, whereas Bilam was knocked out. Bilam hayoidea ma'a kodesh baruch hu asa ledabri imai. Bilam anticipated what Hashem would say in the future. And the Medrash says that interesting mashal letabach shel melech sheyodea ma'a melech karev al shulchan. It's like the cook who knows what the king is going to serve. He knows what the king is going to serve because he works in the kitchen. So did Bilam. So did Bilam. And finally, Bilam hayu medaber imai kol sho. Bilam would speak to Hashem all the time. And whereas by Moshe Rabbeinu, we're saying it wasn't all the time, it wasn't constant. So how do we understand these contrasts? And the second Chazal is what the Maral brings in order to understand it all better. And the second Chazal is that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's from the very beginning of Sefer Vayikra, where if you recall, Vayikra is spelled with a little aleph. Right? The word Vayikra in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra is spelled with a little aleph. And without the aleph, if you just look at it and you don't look at the fine print, so to speak, it's Vayikor. With the aleph, it's Vayikra. And it isolates that aleph as being a small letter but a big difference. That's the approach of Chazal. And they say like this, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu completely differently than he did to Nevi'ei Umay Sa'ilam, specifically to Bilam, to a prophet of the nation, specifically to Bilam. Mm-hmm. And it says like this, Vayikar, in fact, is even a term of Tuma. Vayikar Einay Eloshon Tuma. Right? We speak about a Baal Keri, right? A man who's had a seminal discharge, right? So he's Tuma, he's called a Baal Keri. So what's the idea? Says the Gemara, the Jewish people's Beloshen Torah of Vayikra El Moshe. Vayikar is a half term. Vayikra is a more direct term. So let's look at this and how the Maral describes it and how we can see it, in fact, from the whole story of how the Torah presents this as really the basis of Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu. Last week, when we started on this, the comparison which we drew was to tefillah versus brachas. And it's an important comparison to start the discussion. So let's go over for a second. Excuse me, I made a bracha already. What's the difference between birchas kriya shema and shmona esrei? So birchas kriya shema is also tefillah. Kriya shema is not classically really a tefillah. Kriya shema is a declaration, but the brachas which we make around them are baruch atah Hashem, they're addressed to Hashem. But then we get to what we call the Amida. Why do we call it the Amida? Not just because we stand up. Amida is shorthand. You know, one of the Aveis, Avram Avinu, every one of the Aveis davened. Each one, there's a term which is used, a pasuk where we derive, where we see them davening. By Avram Avinu, the term which is used for his tefillah is Oimed, standing. Standing. We learn out the tefillah of Avram Avinu from when he got up the morning after Sodom, and he went to the place where he had been standing. Avram Aidenu Emeid L'Tanei Hashem. So the Gemara says in the beginning of the fourth parak of Brachas, that was Avram Avinu's Shachris, and Amida is a term of Tefillah, as it says, Vayamod Pinchos Vayefale. Says the Pasuk, what's the actual language of the Pasuk? The actual language of the Pasuk is, both times it says, the Avram, right, when it says that the Malachim turned away, Avram Aidenu Oimed, Avram was still standing Lifnei Hashem. He was standing before Hashem. The next morning, when Avram Avinu gets up to look out on Sodom, and that's again, that's our Shachris, so what does the Pasuk say there? Avram Avinu got up, excuse me, El Hamokim Asher Amat Shem Espnei Hashem, to the place where he stood Espnei Hashem. Okay, so we're not going to get into the nuances here of the difference between Lifnei Hashem and Espnei Hashem, which is worthy of discussion. But the idea here is, we're not just saying that he was standing there, he was standing in the presence of Hashem, so to speak, before the face of Hashem in a literal translation. And we take that as a halachic category when it comes to Shemoneh Esrei. Oymed bifnei Hashem. Right, there's a famous, it's like the second shtickel, the second piece in Rav Chaim Brisker's Chidushim on the Rambam, in the Rav Chaim al Rambam, where he speaks about the idea of kavana and tefillah. He's discussing a complex problem in the Rambam's, how Rambam refers to kavana, you know, direction, intent, and tefillah, and he distinguishes between two kavanas. One kavana is the kavana of knowing what you're saying, and the other kavana is really the overall kavana of tefillah, which is realization that you're standing in the presence of Hashem. And in halacha, we do distinguish between those two things. The marker for it is you speak to Hashem when you're saying the words. When you start saying Baruch Ata Hashem or Hashem Svasai Tiftach, you start speaking to Hashem. When you finish Hamavarech Esama Yisrael Bashalem, or perhaps Yul Ratzayim, you finish talking to Hashem. But you start standing in the presence of Hashem as soon as you take those three steps forward, which is why you take those three steps forward. You take the three steps forward because you're entering an audience with Hashem Yisbarach. And when you finish speaking, the halachas are you're still in Shemoneh Esrei. You're still in the Amida, even though you finished all the words, until you take the three steps back, because you're still Aymed Bifnei Hashem. You're still Aymed Bifnei Hashem. That's the halachic thing, what we call Okar Raglov. You look in halachas, it speaks about Okar Raglov, where he moves his feet. Because the idea is, Shemoneh Esrei standing Bifnei Hashem. That's absent in tefillah. Yes, it's true that we believe that when we get up in the morning and we get dressed and we wash and we take a shower and we stand here, we're always Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samet. Hashem is opposite me always. In a certain sense, Hashem is always in front of you. But there's a difference between the fact that Meloi Chalaretz Kavayde, Hashem's presence is everywhere and He's omniscient and he, you know, He knows everything which is going on with everybody and all of that stuff, and a point where you stand before Hashem with the attentiveness, so to speak, of the panim b'fanim, of the face-to-face encounter. Right? The practical example, the practical metaphor which I gave for you last time was, you know, if somebody's having an issue, right, their child is having an issue in school, right, and they come to the rabbi and say, you know, I had this issue and I spoke to the principal. Right, so I said to you, exactly how do you speak to the principal? What happened? You bumped into him at the supermarket? And you asked him, you know, when you went to carpool, you got out and you spoke to him because he was out there in the parking lot. You called him up on the phone and spoke to him about it. None of those things would be nearly as meaningful as if you did the following. Call him up, his secretary, ask for an appointment for half an hour. You know, he'll know what it's about. He'll know that you're coming at this time. He'll sit up. When you just present something, it's fundamentally different than when you have an appointment, when you have a meeting. There, the encounter is of a qualitatively different nature. Completely, completely different. And that's the difference between Birchas Kriya Shema and Amida Bifnei Hashem. And that's the difference between Vayikor and Vayikra. Vayikor is, he chanced to him. Vayikra is, and he connected to him. He related to him. Vayikra is to call. You know where the word Vayikra comes? It's an incredible thing. You have to know this. It's a very, very important thing to notice. You know, all the chumashim of the Torah, right, Bereshis doesn't start with a vav because it's the beginning. Right? Vayishmai starts with a vav. Ve'ela Shemais b'nei Yisrael. As much as it's a distinct book, and there's a big difference between Bereshis and Shemais, but you know, it's really just picking up the story where the story left off. So there's a vav, a conjunction. Vayikra starts with a vav. Bamidbar starts with a vav. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe bamidbar Sinai. Dvarim doesn't start with a vav. Eilah Hadvarim. And indeed, we see Dvarim as being a different book, right? As the Chazal say, Dvarim was Moshe Rabbeinu's words, as opposed to Hakadosh Baruch Hu's words, right? Whatever that means. That's not for now. But there's one conjunction which is an amazing connection between them, which is the end of Sefer Shmos and the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. The end of Sefer Shmos is where the Mishkan is complete. And the Pasuk describes the Vayichas Ha'ananas Ayel Moed, the cloud covered the Ayel Moed, the presence of Hashem filled the Mishkan. Moshe couldn't come into the Ayel Moed because of the presence of Hashem there, etc. And it says he couldn't come in. Then it describes the Anan would get up, when it would lift itself up, when it was time to travel, and so on and so forth. And then it says, Vayikra el Moshe, and Hashem called to Moshe. So what's the idea? So Rashi says, So the thing is that I'm sorry, I'm not finding Rashi the second. I'm not going to take the time But this is the thing. The pasuk says Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't come in. He couldn't come in. The presence of Hashem there was overwhelming. Then what happens? Vayikra el Moshe, vayidaber Hashem elav me'el moed lemar. But then Hashem calls to Moshe. He summons Moshe and he speaks to him from the el moed, saying, meaning that yes, naturally to begin with, you know, this is Hashem's space, and Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to be able to so easily enter. But then it becomes right. Vayikra el Moshe is not just the beginning of the laws of Karbonis, which is going to fill Tiras Kayan and Sefer Vayikra, but it's now that we have the el moed established. Now Hashem can summon Moshe there and speak to him. And as you know, the Ramban explains, the Mishkan was just a way really of continuing the environment of Har Sinai, perpetuating the environment of Har Sinai. Har Sinai was also this, the cloud and the fire of Hashem's presence, and how could Moshe Rabbeinu even go out there? But ultimately Hashem calls Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu enters it, and he has this tremendous intimate encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what was perpetuated here. Vayikra Moshe v'Hashem el Moed Lemar. So what I say by that the conjunction here is the most profound, is because at the end of Sefer Shemais we describe the entire setup of the place which was supposed to be the place of Moed. What does Moed mean? Meeting. And now that we've established the place of meeting, the place for such communication to occur, Hashem calls to Moshe, and that communication occurs. Moed is the opposite of Mikra. You know, some who work with Hebrew Sharashim will take the same letters and move them around. Oimed is the same letters as Moed, right? In other words, right? So you know, the standing, the creation of the meeting. But clearly, Moed is the exact opposite of Mikra. Mikra is a chance meeting. Moed is a fixed set meeting. We call the Yomim Tovim the Moadim, right? The Moadim, because they are the times when we're supposed to go up to the Beis HaMikdash and have Yero Panai. You see the face of Hashem, right? That's what Moed is. And in fact, Moed also, right? Miuad means targeted, designated. Yiudo, right? Your Yiud is your goal. Right, your specific mission. When we speak about Moshe Rabbeinu, we speak about him in the context of the El Moed. We speak about a very directed, intended relationship, like my appointment with the principal, like the Shemana Esrei, like that Amida Bifnei Hashem, where you gay, okay, now it's my time, I stand, I move into his presence. With Bilam, it's exactly the opposite. It's Vayikar. Vayikar is, and he called. Rashi brings that any dibur which Hashem had to Moshe Rabbeinu, even though it doesn't always say it, but we have to understand that it was always there. We learn from this one, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu first had a kriya. He didn't just say, oh, Moshe, this. He said, Moshe, can I have your attention, please? Moshe, come here. Let's connect. Well, they connected in the context of now that we have each other, we're focused on each other. Now I share with you the word. Now I share with you the idea which you want to share. And that was the idea of the connection which HaKadosh Baruch Hu established with Moshe. With Bilam. Bilam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him access to holiness. But it was Vayikar, it was so to speak by chance. Remember that mashal? It's such a good mashal that Chazal give, that we just quoted, that the Maharal quoted. What was that? Oh, Bilam knew what Hashem was speaking about. Just like the cook knows what's going on in the state dinner, or the waiter for that matter. He knows what's for dinner tonight. He's not the guest. It's not for him. He's not the one who it's designated. He's not party to the meeting. He's on the perimeter of the meeting. And therefore he's able to know what's going on. But it's not about him. And so, says the Maharal, every one of the distinctions that we have here is all going to be part of that same essential distinction. The same essential distinction of panim el panim, of face to face. The first three, panim el panim, pe el pe, amoid, right? It was one thing, is Moshe Rabbeinu having that direct encounter. Bilam fell. In other words, farkert. Not only was he not meant, not only wasn't he the target of this, but when he would have a direct encounter with Hashem, it would knock him out. When he would even see it to some degree, it was so much not intended for him that he couldn't have it. He saw it, he chanced it, like our case, you know, like the peanuts, you know that it's there, you know exactly that it's there, right? But it's not that you have it there and you're savoring, oh, I savor each flavor here and I bring it out and I have it for myself. It's the opposite. It's from the fact that you can't see it that you have it. Right, the idea of Yodea Daselyun, Bilam knew what Hashem would eventually say. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't. Why? Because with Moshe Rabbeinu, the whole thing was to come out from a meeting with Hashem. So that means the person who calls the meeting sets the stage. They roll it out carefully, exactly, precisely. That's what it's coming in that context. Whereas with Bilam, it was more that he was just picking up the pieces as they were there. And finally, Bilam would have it all the time. Moshe didn't have it all the time. Because you can't have an intense meeting all the time. Or you could be around something all the time. Right? You could be around something all the time. But to have a direct, absolute encounter with it, a real meeting, a real togetherness, that you can't have all the time. That you can't have all the time. So all of the distinctions are going to be covered in this way. All of them are going to be covered in this way. Yeah.
In the first capital to Tehillim, that there are three basic states or statuses a person can be in. They can be in a yeshiva, hamida, or halicha. Not in that order, but so one more time. Why is specifically tefillah associated with hamida specifically, as opposed to say yeshiva? Halicha is always when you're changing your status. I'm going someplace. I'm not. I don't want to be here anymore.
Okay, you're asking a very good question. The first psalm, the first kapitel Tillim says, "Ashrei ish, fortunate is the man, asher lo holach batzas v'shoem, who didn't walk in the ways of the in the counsel of the wicked, uvederech hatoyim, and the ways of the sinners lo amad, he didn't stand, uvemoishav leitzim." And amongst the scoffers, lo yoshav, he didn't sit. Right? So that's a progression. Walking, standing, sitting. The Gemara says, right, if he didn't walk, so then of course he didn't stand. If he didn't stand, then of course, if he didn't even walk there, he didn't stand there. Of course, if he didn't stand there, of course he didn't sit there. So the Gemara makes a drasha to explain what each one is. But walking through a neighborhood is different than stopping there, and stopping there is different than settling down there. So you're asking, okay, so Ahmad, you're trying to talk about a real relationship with Hashem. You want to have a real relationship with Hashem, sit down, right? Maybe Birchas Kriyat Shema is better because you're sitting down. So the thing is like this. You can sit down with Leitzonim or Rishoyim or Chatoim. You shouldn't. You could sit down with Tzadikim, right? With Tzadikim and Anavim and Chachamim, right? And that's what we say, right? The Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos, a person should establish the place where he dwells to be among Tzadikim. Don't just visit them. Live there. Live there. You can't live with Hashem. Right? That's part of what the Maharal just said in his last point. Bilam could have it all the time. Because in fact, Bilam wasn't living with Hashem. He was living in the neighborhood. Right? And, you know, he got some shrapnel, you know, from the Nevuah. You know, he picked it up, you know, a little bit of the stuff. You know, the what do they call it? You know, the Shards. Asbestos particles, you know, floating through the air. That's, you know, he inhaled. You know, but the one who's going and having the direct encounter, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't have it constant. It couldn't be constant because intent. You can't. Right? Shemoneh Esrei has to have a defined beginning and a defined end. Right? So it's not, you're not walking through. You stand in one place. That's the strength of the encounter. But on the other hand, you can't sit. Sit means armchair relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Moshe Rabbeinu stood on Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. That's the description which the Pasuk says. V'nechi amadati bahar. Right? And the Gemara takes it literally. The Gemara has different versions of it. But amadati bahar. Right? We learn from that halacha of standing during learning. Right, now we don't do it, as the Gemara explains. We got different, but we still stand. The person who's reading the Kriyas HaTorah still stands as a remembrance of that. Right, there's an intensity. You can't make yourself necessarily at home with that.
Specifically, in between.
That's correct. It can't be casual, and it can't be fleeting. It has to be a real meeting, but with an intensity, and a intensity that can't be just perpetual.
You couldn't live with Hashem directly, but someone says, Tzadik v'emuna yichye, so it means with the tzadik, with his emuna yichye, but not with the Kadosh Baruch Hu constantly.
Okay, good.
Why would the Gemara say halavai the person should now be all day?
I don't think that the Gemara is saying that a person should, or the Gemara thinks that a person could. The Gemara over there is speaking about tfilas nedava. So some say, can you daven an extra tefillah? No, you can't daven an extra tefillah. You can only daven the prescribed tefillahs. The other one says, no, you can daven tefillahs nedava. If a person would be able to daven all day, that would be great. It doesn't mean that you can. It means, if you could sustain that, if you could, it would be a good thing. We don't daven tefillahs nedava. We don't daven extra tefillahs beyond the one, Shmoneh Esrei. A person wants to express himself. Why? Because we have a problem even maintaining the intensity for one, not just for one paragraph. Okay, this is like our great sobriety check here. The Gemara says that if a person didn't think about what he was doing during the first bracha of the Shemoneh Esrei, he has to repeat the Shemoneh Esrei. The Shulchan Aruch, right? But what does the Shulchan Aruch then go on and say? But we don't do that. Why? Because we're really afraid that we're going to go and we'll say it again, and again we won't think about what we're saying. Okay? You think ADD just came now, I'm saying, this is like we lost the ability to focus on the connection. Forget Tefillah Kol Hayom, we don't do a single extra Shemoneh Esrei. And we have, you talk about Moshe Rabbeinu not being able to do it constantly. Sorry, a couple other people.
When we dive in and Shabbos, Mikra Kodesh, is it a chance meeting?
No, it's not Mikra. That it's Mikra. It's the words are very close. The difference between Vayikra and Vayikra is an Aleph. Mikra Kodesh. It's with the Aleph there. It's a holy calling, designation. Right? When you do Mikra Kodesh, some say the notion of Mikra Kodesh is because at the beginning of Shabbos you make the declaration of Kiddush to sanctify the day. That's exactly it. It's not a chance meeting with Shabbos. It's a declared and announced meeting with Shabbos. Yontiv is Mikra Kodesh. The same thing. It's declared and announced. Not chance. Yeah?
I guess just a little clarification how we say that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have, to speak with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he had to have specific meetings. I was under the impression that with just like the connection of Torah, that there was always kind of this constant connection between Moshe Rabbeinu or maybe even Tzadikim. And I guess my example would be that when the Bnei Yisrael came to him for Pesach Sheni and said, we would like to go, and he says, well, let me talk to the Kodesh Baruch Hu. He did a 360 and gave him the answer.
Okay, very, very good question as well. The truth is that what the Maharal is saying over here, it's not a contradiction, but it's like sort of like an ironic contrast to what the Ramchal says. Ramchal has a very fascinating pshat in it, which almost looks like the opposite of this. And it sounds like the opposite of what the Chazal that's quoted here, but when you think about it, it's not really a contradiction. When Moshe Rabbeinu, we have two places where the Torah speaks about the uniqueness of the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. One is at the very end of the Torah, which of course it says it there because the Torah is ending in the middle of the story. The whole Torah is about coming to Eretz Yisrael. It ends in the middle of the story. Like the Gemara says, Sefer Yeshua, really, even if the Jewish people hadn't sinned and history would have ended with the Jewish people coming to Eretz Yisrael in a positive way, we still would have had to have Sefer Yeshua. Because Sefer Yeshua says they came to Eretz Yisrael and this is where this guy went, this way. The first Rashi in the Chumash says the whole thing is about coming to Eretz Yisrael and then the Torah ends before Eretz Yisrael. So the reason why the Torah ends there is because Torah can only be given to us by Moshe Rabbeinu. Remember that thing that we started with this morning. Moshe Rabbeinu was so utterly unique, and therefore his prophecy is so utterly unique, that the Torah, which is so utterly unique, can only be given from him. So when Moshe Rabbeinu dies, Torah ends, period. the Torah Shebichsav, the original Torah, in that sense, of course, Torah doesn't end, Torah keeps going, but the Torah of the quality of Moshe Rabbeinu has to end when Moshe Rabbeinu dies. So it's not like Moshe Rabbeinu is one of the great important personalities, characters in this book called the Torah, right? The Torah can't exist, can't be communicated without Moshe, so when Moshe Rabbeinu dies, it's over. So that's what the Torah says. There's no other prophets like Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why you're going to have to get this other book from somebody else. But the other place where it has it is when Miriam and Aaron attacked Moshe Rabbeinu for separating from his wife. And what did they say? They said, we're also prophets. We don't have to do that. So Hashem steps forward and he says, no, 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 no. And that becomes, that's why it's one of the Ikarei HaAmunah, the fundamentals of faith, is there are prophets and there are prophets. There are prophets and there are prophets. We could be talking about a very different subject than saying that. But here, right? There, he says, Lechein Avdi Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu is different. And what are the words that come after Lechein Avdi Moshe? B'chol Beisi Nemanhu. Literally translated, in all of my house, he is faithful. The way conventionally that pasuk is translated is that Moshe Rabbeinu is the most faithful of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's servants, most faithful of his prophets, and therefore his word is different than anybody else's. His connection with Hashem is different than everybody else's. The Ramchal has a fascinating literal translation. I think I shared it with you once, but it was a while back. Right? It has a fascinating literal translation of that pasuk. B'chol Beis Neman, who means, I trust him in all my house. What does that mean? Right, so example, yay, when I said it to you last time was, so you know, we have a superintendent here, a janitor here in the building, and he has a big ring of keys, right? But he doesn't have the key to the main office. He doesn't have the key to this office, but of course any kid in shul has the combination to this office, right? But he doesn't have a key to the main office. He doesn't have a key to the Aron Kodesh, right? Because there are certain areas in which we trust him, and there are other areas in which we don't trust him. We give him what he's supposed to have. Moshe Rabbeinu HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I gave him the master key to Kol Beisi. There's no area of that I have, so to speak, that I withhold from him. B'chol Beisi Nemanhu, I trust him throughout the house. Other Nevi'im, there's a specific message, a specific idea, a specific prophecy, I give it to them. I give them that spot. I give them that room. I give them that drawer. Moshe Rabbeinu has the run of the place. B'chol Beisi Nemanhu. Now, there's a notion of Atichasrei Umat Me'elehim, which Mirtz Hashem will talk about a little bit as we conclude today, where Moshe Rabbeinu didn't, you know, he had 49 gates of wisdom, but not the 50th. But that, the idea is, presumably, not even the bias. That's not the house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is what only HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself could know. But that's like a contrast to this. That's saying, Moshe Rabbeinu, like you're saying, Yisrael, you had a question on Pesach Sheni, Moshe Rabbeinu says, one second, I'll find out. You know, so is that meeting and so on and so forth. But I don't think it's really a contradiction. What Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, right, like Chazal say, Ashrei Yilud Isha, Moshe Rabbeinu would be able to turn to Hashem, to come to Hashem, to ask about anything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would let him go any place. He would let him go any place. Does that mean that therefore Moshe Rabbeinu did it without Hashem? That's what Chazal are saying here. Whenever Moshe Rabbeinu got, he got it from direct encounter with Hashem. So I think that they're complementary ideas, not contradictory ideas. Yeah.
The way you would reconcile the Kabbalah, I think it's based on last part of Lechon Yisrael, that's Maramis to Bilam, that he had at least an equal or higher Navi IQ, is that it's really the intended recipient. It's a relationship. He may have been a bigger prophet, but it's irrelevant that it was intended for Moshe.
Correct.
It also says by Aaron and Miriam that Hashem appeared to them in peace psalm, I think it says, suddenly.
Correct.
So that's like a happenstance sort of appearance.
Right, without designation. Mm-hmm. And again, there's like a little bit of a contrast there. Again, it's at first glance one might see that even as a contradiction to this. What's the lesson there? Right? Rashi says in Chumash, he appeared to Moshe, Aaron and Miriam suddenly. So what's the idea? The truth is they were tamei because they had keri. They had tumas keri. You know, they had normal married life, so therefore they really had to prepare. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, you know, I don't show up to you suddenly. You have to prepare for me. Moshe Rabbeinu, he's always ready. he's always ready. And in order for him to always be ready, so he can't be attached to his wife. He has to be this way. He's always ready. Tim, I can come anytime. Right? But again, that means he's always ready to be called. He's still always ready. It's going to be the encounter. You know, that's explain it. That's really, I mean, if you think about it, that's the Tumas Keri. I mean, it's not here for us to talk about this whole thing. It's worthy of a separate discussion, right? But Tumas Keri is because a person moves from having the most intense of encounters. Tumas Keri is after a man has relations, right? So there's Tumas Keri. He has it, and she also, to a certain degree, has it. He goes from having the most intense connection to being spent and turning away and not having connection. That's the term for it. That's why it's, in a certain sense, it's called mikra laila. It's turning from intensity to separation. To separation, to some degree, to disengagement. Okay, again, it's for a separate discussion. But Moshe Rabbeinu, because of the idea that he had to always be primed for the connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it would be different. But I want to just share with you something here, just to understand a little better. Because right now, the way we're understanding it to some degree is, okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu had it with direct encounter. Bilam had it sort of by chance. But there's a depth to the difference here, which is very important. And I think a good way to bring it out is through a beautiful pirush from Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Rav Chaim Volozhiner, in the Ruach Chaim on Pirkei Avos, speaks about Avodim, right? The Mishnah of Antigonus Ish Socho. Al Tiu Kavodim Hamasham Shinas Harav Amnas Lekavol Pras, El Avu Kavodim Hamasham Shinas Harav Shaleh Amnas Lekavol Pras. Don't be like servants who serve the master on condition to get pras. Pras normally means reward, right? So you have to understand, how could that be? Why should that be? The Torah all over the place speaks about rewards. So, you know, there are many different layers of interpretation. Rav Chaim Volozhiner includes, he has a lengthy discussion of this Mishnah, but he has one of the Perushim which he gives here is a very, I think, unique Perush on the Mishnah. And he explains it by speaking about the term pras, which again many do, you know, because pras oftentimes speak about schar, right? That's the more conventional term. Even the Rambam speaks about this distinction. But the Reb Chaim has a unusual understanding of the difference. And he says that pras, you find in the Gemara, is like an allowance. Like an allowance that you take home. An eved is mekabel pras me rabbi. And he says there are two ways that you can be fed. Let's say the servant, there are two ways that he can be fed. One way he can be fed is eating in, and the other way is take out. Right? The other way is take out. Right? If you are invited to a royal feast, okay, let's just give this as a mundane example which doesn't capture the whole thing. You are invited to a royal feast, to Sudas Shloima HaMelech, right? And they're serving, I don't know, come up with some good things, I don't know, tender steaks or whatever, tenderloins, which you can't eat anyways, and whatever, you know, like all this, all, you know, like all these things, you know, and it's like fantastic, delicious food, ducks and goose and who knows whatever, filet de gras, whatever.
Pâté de foie gras.
Pâté de foie gras. So, I know French, but I can't read a menu. You know, they're serving all of this fantastic food, right? Like unbelievable, incredible food that you're having there by the Suda Shlema Melech. And somebody says to you, you know what, I think the king's going to be a while. So you'll say, oh, really, he is? You know what, maybe, would you mind, you have like, could I bag it and take it? Right? Now, there could be somebody who would say that. And we would say, one second, what about the idea of the fact that you're invited to a feast with the king? Like, you know, if you're a person who has some appreciation of the king, of what it is to have a royal encounter, so then when you come back, you don't say, oh my gosh, the food was awesome. Right? When you come back, you say, I had this meeting with the king. Right? And again, I'm not talking about like some despot. I'm talking about, you know, Shloima HaMelech. Okay? Let's continue. Right? I met Shloima HaMelech. and his wisdom and his fear of heaven and you know, the encounter, right? Oh, by the way, what do they serve? Also, while I was there, you know, the food was really, really good, you know. But you're just going to take it? So he says a person could serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We know that there are great rewards for serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But you can serve Hashem thinking that you can get pras. What's pras? Pras is Hashem's going to give you some wonderful things you can take home and enjoy. That's not the way a person's supposed to serve Hashem. What do we say about Olam Haba? Olam Haba ain't by lo yachila v'lo yishtia. We don't eat, we don't drink, we sit, and we're sustained by the radiance of Hashem's presence. Which means that the biggest sustenance comes from just being with Hashem. The biggest thing is being with Hashem. Don't serve Hashem that He's going to give you some break-off gifts, pras, allowance you can take home and enjoy for yourself. No, you're supposed to serve Hashem to be with Him. And that's the greatest reward. The greatest reward is just being with Him. That's the greatest sustenance, the greatest nourishment. Everything's going to be from just being with Him. That's the meaning of the Mishnah. Isn't that an unbelievably beautiful, different understanding of the Mishnah? Right? It's not a nasa kabbalah. It's not that you're going to take something and go home with it. You're serving Hashem so you can be in His presence. Achas sha'alti me'es Hashem oisa avakesh. You know, he says over always, sometime during El. It's so important. One thing I ask from Hashem, that's what I seek. Sitting in the base of Hashem, kol yimei chayei lachzei b'nei Hashem v'akir b'echolei. So what's the double expression? Achas sha'alti eisa avakesh. Malbim says, others say, what's the difference in a she'ela and a bakasha? Two terms for a request. What's the difference between a sheila and a bakasha? Right? So I say, could you do me a favor? Could you lend me $5? Right? I want to have $5. What do I need $5 for? The thing is that I'm hungry. I want to go get breakfast. I don't have any money on me. I want to go to the store to get breakfast. Right? So you give me $5. That's my sheila. That's what I'm asking for. My bakasha is what I really seek. What I really seek is the bagel. That's what I really seek. There's a means to an end, and then there's the end itself. So David HaMelech says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's one thing that I ask, and that's what I seek. I don't want it just as a means, I want it as the end. And that is, I want to be in the house of Hashem. Shifti veis Hashem kol yimei chayei lachzei b'nei Hashem v'akir b'echolei. You know, you could say, and it's a very important Rosh Hashanah thought. You know, everybody comes to shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, right? Elul, right? More intensity ever. Why? Because, you know, Hashem's deciding the whole thing. I got to come to. I want to have good parnasa. I want to have good health. I want to have this. I want to have that. I want to have the other thing. Got to come to shul because there's some things we got to take home from shul. Right? David HaMelech says, and we say this as the mantra of the whole season of Dirshu Hashem B'Matzah is Rabbanu Shel Olam. You know, I want to be here on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur because I can be with you in a way that I can't be any other time. I'm not here for the take-homes. I'm not here so I'll guarantee my parnasa for the next 11 months. I'm here. This is what I want more than anything, just to be here, just the closeness. And that's a constant idea which we have to have. It's illustrated all over the place. All over the place, this distinction between the two of them. Is it a means to an end, or is the encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu the ultimate goal, the ultimate end in itself? Don't serve Hashem for the pras that he'll give you something great. Just for its sake. So now, come back. You understand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu encounters Bilam. There is no encounter. There is no encounter. Even when he does come up against the word of Hashem, it's without the encounter. Moshe Rabbeinu, it's the encounter that's essential. It's not that just, oh, Hashem speaks to him with an appointment. That's the whole thing. The whole thing is to be there in the connection of Hashem. And that's why Bilam is considered the opposite. He's considered Mikri, he's considered Tamei. Look at what Bilam says. You don't need Chazal in that sense for this. What does Bilam say? Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want to go anyway. Right? I mean, this is a person who's seeking to be nourished by an encounter with Hashem. Bilam is a person who's trying to an end run around the will of Hashem. And he's successful. Hashem says, that's what you want, fine, do it. I'm not going to resist. I'll let you do it. Right? That's, you know, the opposite of one who is seeking engagement with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Moshe Rabbeinu is the paradigm of Nevuah. Because That's it. He's there living in the presence of Hashem, and he understands that that's not just the means. It's what it's about. It's the whole goal. Yeah.
I mean, but if it's also a means, what if, how do we understand that all not historically Kabbalah's Pnei Shechina?
Okay, so I'm going to try. I'm going to answer the question briefly, but it's a big discussion. The difference is that Hachnasas Archim is being like Hashem, which is even greater than standing opposite Hashem. Avraham Avinu's connection to Hashem, besides the connection he had with Tefillah, was all the good chesed, and that's Mahu Af'ata, where you can be like him. So Chazal say, Avraham Avinu said to Hashem, look, I can stand here and I can engage with you and I can talk to you, but here we have an option to be like you. To be like you. Which is the next step. Okay. So I want to fast forward. There's more to talk about. He speaks about Shlomo HaMelech, where Chazal also say, it says there was no Navi like Moshe, but there was a king like Moshe. Shlomo HaMelech. And Shlomo HaMelech also had this tremendous, tremendous wisdom. So, you know, that's a different thing. Moshe Rabbeinu was primarily a Navi and secondarily a king. Vayhi Bishurun Melech, many understand, refers to Ramban, others understand, refers to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't think of Moshe HaMelech. We think about Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe the Navi, right? But secondarily, he was the king. On the other hand, you have kings who may have secondarily been prophets, right? Shlomo HaMelech was the successor to David HaMelech as the king, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the greatest wisdom. It was secondary to his role as the Melech. And, you know, that's something to keep in mind. But he wasn't the nice in HaTayr, Shlomo HaMelech, even so. Right? He had it as a tool in his arsenal, because Shlomo HaMelech was this grandiose king who was, not in a negative sense, but he was this king who was Shoylet Alal Yoinim V'Tachtoinim. His kingdom was so pervasive that part of that included a great command of Torah. But we're not going to discuss that at length here. I just want to fast forward to the sort of the closing comment of the Maral on this perek, which is sort of vintage, a classic Maralian piece. So he says this ultimately would explain the name of Moshe. Right? Everyone is asking about the name of Moshe. Everybody knows that Chazal say Moshe Rabbeinu had other names. His mother gave him a name. Moshe was the name which Bas Parah gave him. Why is he called by that name? And there are many nice explanations as to why that is there. The Maral speaks about the name of Moshe as a combination of three letters, Mem, Shin, and Hey, and sees in each one part of that which was the essence of Moshe Rabbeinu. So what's that? Explains the Maral as follows. Mem, this is to quite at the end of the thing. Mipnei Gaidel Malas Moshe, if you, those who are using the Hartman edition, it's on page Shin Chav Beis. If you're using the regular edition, it's probably the last paragraph. Mipnei Gaidel Malas Moshe, because in Perek Chav Aleph, because of the greatness of the quality of Moshe Rabbeinu, v'yichudei b'nevuah, and his uniqueness in prophecy, Moira Olof Shemai, that his name is suited for that. Kizeh Moshe Ha'ish. On the one hand, right, when the Jewish people refer to Moshe Rabbeinu at the story of the eagle, they say, this Moshe the man, we don't know what happened to him. Moshe, on the one hand, is called the Ish. V'ha'ish Moshe, and the man Moshe was Anav Moed, we call Adam Alpnei Adama. On the other hand, the Pasuk in Tehillim, when it speaks about man, it says, V'techasreu ma'at me'elehim, me'elekim. You made him slightly less than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, in the original plan. And Chazal understand that the one who actually had that was Moshe Rabbeinu. So in another sense, he was close to godly. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu, regarding whom it says, as it continues the Maral, Mi'ola Shamayim Vayerad. Chazal say, who went up to the heavens and came down? There is an answer to that question. It's not rhetorical. Moshe Rabbeinu went up and came down. Moshe haya min hatachtonim umin ha'elyonim. Moshe Rabbeinu was referred to as an ish ha'elokim, right? As a man of God, right? So what does that mean? He was the real combo, the real mix. Ben Adam and Ben Elohim. Mechetze ulamata ish, mechetze ulamala Elohim. Right? His bottom half, so to speak, was man. His top half was God. He was somehow this bridge personality between Hashem uveinechem, as the language says. So, what's the letter Mem? The letter Mem is the middle of the Aleph Beis. It's the middle of the Aleph Beis. Moshe Rabbeinu was this bridge between heaven and earth. So his name begins with the letter, which is the bridge. Okay, that's the Mem. The Achar Kach HaShin. Then comes the Shin. Why? Shin is, oh, it's not the last letter of the Aleph Beis. Right? When we speak about MS, we look at the first letter of the Aleph Beis, the middle letter of the Aleph Beis, the last letter of the Aleph Beis, and that, there's a reason for that. Right? But here, it's not the last letter, it's the second last letter. Why? Because the aspect, now we have to look, in Shin and Hey, we have to look at the aspect of Moshe Rabbeinu, which was heavenly, and the aspect which was earthy. The first letter speaks about Moshe Rabbeinu as being in the middle. The next letter speaks about the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, the higher part. And that is way high, but it's not all the way. It's Vatechasreu Ma'at Me'elikim. He wasn't quite as high as it gets. He was a little bit below. Right, that's what he said, the 49, not the 50th. He knew what was in the house, but he didn't have Hashem himself. So he had Shin. That was the other hand. But then on the other hand, like the Jewish people complained at the Egel, Moshe Rabbeinu went up onto Har Sinai, and he ain't coming back. Where is he? He was supposed to be back today. Where is he? Right? Where's Moshe Ha'ish? Where's Moshe the man? Where's the Moshe who comes back here? So what's the Moshe who's down here? The Moshe who's down here is the Hay. Why? Explains the Maral, although if you would have asked me, I would have perhaps guessed a little bit different, as we've discussed many times, how the Maral explains that this world is created with the letter Hay, because it's the Dalid, the four directions with the dot, with the presence of Hashem in it. Here he explains it differently. And he says, because when you start at the bottom, what's the bottom? The bottom is the raw individual elements that exist in the world. Afar, Mayim, Ruach, Eish, right? Dust, water, wind, fire, right? The raw elements. That's level one. Level two is daimimim, is inanimate objects that are nevertheless murkavim, right? That are a combination of the elements. You take the elements are somehow, you know, blended together to form things, like the soil, right? Like, and so on. That's level two. Level three is tzemech, is plants that grow out of the ground. They're already alive. They're not basic elements and not even materials. They're already live beings, plants. Again, these are distinctions which are made not just in the writings of Chazal, but they're also found, you know, in parallel in the writings of the Greeks, the Havdil, right? Plants. And then the next level is chai. Living things, like animals, that are not just alive like a plant that grows, but they also have what we call nefesh hatnua. They're alive and they move and they go around. And then the next level is medaber, the human being. And that's the level which Moshe Rabbeinu came down to. He didn't descend below that. He was on level five. Earthy, he was on level five as the medaber. Says the Maral, that's the name Moshe. Moshe is a combination between the middle, almost the end up here, and on the level of the human being down there. And that was the phenomenon called Moshe Rabbeinu. It's unique, different than everybody else, because of how high he went, and therefore able to bring down the Torah, which was some thing that we could be able to use down here in this world. That was his role, that was his place, and that was his name. Yeah.
I would probably say he was the penultimate, he was the one before the highest, that would maybe be the base. It seems like the Aleph would be closest to Hashem and the top would be farthest from Hashem.
If you see it as a progression, starting down here. In other words, you're asking his name should be Shema. Or or Mahash. 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 The Mahashashi. It's an interesting question. If it would have gone that way, since Moshe Rabbeinu went up, I guess, I could speculate. Anything I'll speculate, you'll be able to speculate also. Why does it specifically start from the top and go down? I would guess would be because the uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu was not the hay. The uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu, what made him the middle one, was the shin, was how high he was. Now you're asking, should it be Aleph, tough to Aleph, and Aleph, I think it's an ascending. Aleph is one, right? It goes up. Now many times we identify the one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the ribui with more, but here it's that other way. It's a nice question. It's a nice question you're asking. Okay, yeah.
If Bilam was not such a Rasha, would he have lost his Nevuah? Not being able to. Okay.
I think so. I mean, again, according to this understanding, any Bilam wouldn't have been so bad, then he couldn't have had it. It's a fascinating irony. Okay, here we go. Have a good Tevach. Where do we find that name? I don't think it appears in that way in Tanakh, but you have it in liturgy. They speak Mimois Avigdor, right? I forget already where it is, but in one of the slichas, we reference the days of Avigdor referring to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the etymology of the name is the one who protected. Godar is a fence, right? The Av Shegodar Pirtzeisein Shel Yisrael. He enclosed the breaches of the Jewish people. Yeah.
What's the website? What is it
about? I'm not sure. Well, I think it's what's it called? Is that Torah?
Torah Media.
Is that what it is? But you do if you. I don't know how to get it from there. But in our from the shul, they have a shul website, which is bjsz.org. And on the bottom, there's a button, podcasts. When you push that button, it takes you to where this can be found. There's a registration, but it's a free registration.
Is anybody?
Yeah.